Broadcasting for University. This is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva's first choice for NPR News.
President Obama declared this week that the state of our union is strong. But Republicans disagree. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. During his State of the Union address, President Obama threw some feisty words at his Republican opposition, and he challenged them to avoid the financial cliffs of the past several years. Meanwhile, Senator Marco Rubio responded to Republicans with an attack on the president, a man of big government. But there was also a kibitzer for the GOP, Senator Rand Paul, who made a response to the State of the Union under the Tea Party Express banner. He chided both parties for big spending, although he did save his harshest rhetoric for the president. To start out all of this, our in-studio guests are Mike Prettle, who is with the Waucomico County Democratic Party, who is also involved in environmental issues. Also, Michael Schwartz, he's with the Republican Waucomico Central Committee, and Salisbury University's political science professor, Michael Laughlin, who is also a local progressive activist. Well, first of all, the big news here locally is yesterday, Salisbury University President Tana Dudley Eschbach has proposed transferring the licenses of the two Delmarva public radio stations from Salisbury University Foundation to the university itself. And the president said it believed that the transfer could place in about 60 to 90 days. And also under the plan, WSCL would maintain its full-time classical music format. Meanwhile, the university would explore partnerships with WSDL that would enable it to transfer some of the day-to-day operations and costs to another operator while keeping a portion of the programming local. In addition, the university has committed itself to $250,000 at least next year for operating costs, and also has asked the Friends of Delmarva Public Radio to conduct fundraising and provide at least $250,000 annually. One of the board members, of course, is Mike Prettle, and you were actually at the meeting yesterday. First of all, what was your own reaction to this proposal? It certainly was unexpected.
Well, we are optimistic. We were hoping we'd have something by now, and we were happy to see that. We had set up Delmarva Public Radio as a nonprofit organization about 6 months ago with the idea that we would work with the university to try to, and the University Foundation to try to preserve the local programming, in part because of the wonderful work that you do here, and we feel very strongly that this is a tremendous benefit to the community. So things always go slower than one expects, but we never get quite everything we want. But we did make a proposal to the president of the university a month or two ago, and she accepted part of it, and we hope to be able to work in the future with the university and the foundation and keeping alive the wonderful things that Delmarva Public Radio has given to the community for 25 years now.
I want to follow up with this idea that, at least in her proposal, that the Friends of Delmarva Public Radio provide at least $250,000 annually, that is, per year. What's your reaction to that? Pretty steep. That's actually much more than what you would.
We had suggested, and we've spoken to a number of people who do fundraising locally and who feel that that's within the realm of the possible. I mean, we have felt from the beginning that the subsidy, so-called, or the loss, if you will, that the station has incurred during the period of time is relatively slim given its overall budget and the budget of the university and that sort of thing. But at the same time, we have sort of tested the water a little bit, and we feel that we probably can deliver on a pledge, or at least an intention to raise some money to augment funds that have been put in by other sources and keep the stations viable. It's not a lot of money to be raised in a vibrant community like this.
One other question about this. I know for WSDL, the proposal says that it's going to explore partnerships, maybe transfer day-to-day operations, as well as at the same time committing itself, the university, to try and keeping some of the local news and local content. What's your reaction to that? Because I know you're a big fan of WSDL.
Well, that's one of the parts that I have some concern about. I'm not sure exactly what that means. I mean, I think from the beginning they were talking about the classical music staying alive on WSCL, but there was some question whether WSDL would keep alive in its present format, and we're not sure exactly what the intentions of the university are. Obviously, the devil's in the details, and I personally feel very strongly that if the Friends are going to contribute support, that we're going to ask or seek a commitment that the all the good things that this WSDL give remain pretty much in place, or that they don't water it down to something less favorable and less beneficial to the community.
And finally and quickly, what's the next step in all this process, at least as you understand?
Well, there will be two or three meetings to formalize this. My understanding then is that there will be a request to the FCC for the change of license, and we've already talked about whether we will be participating in that process and maybe use that process as a way of ensuring that some of these things come to pass that we're looking for.
Okay, so again, just to reiterate that the Salisbury Youth President, Jana Dudley Eschbach, has proposed transferring the licenses of the two Delmarva Public Radio stations from the Salisbury University Foundation to the university itself. Could be completed in as little as 60 to 90 days from the time of the application. Under the plan, WSEL would maintain its full-time classical music format. Meanwhile, the university would also seek and explore partnerships for WSDL to transfer at least some of its day-to-day operations and costs to another operator, as well as trying to keep the portion of the local programming. In addition to which, the university has committed itself to providing $250,000 to the operating costs of the station for the next fiscal year. Also, we have a contribution request from the Friends of Delmarva Public Radio at $250,000 on an annual basis, as well as, of course, the station will be moving. University has committed itself to a space near the East Campus Complex, and so we expect to keep on top of that and see how that's going. Now let's turn to the president and the State of the Union. And one of the things I want to start off with a clip here. Because the president declared, amongst other things, he noticed that he was going to cut U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan by another 34,000 next year. Also, a quick rebuke, for instance, to North Korea as well for the nuclear test that apparently was carried out. And basically what he said and maintained is that the State of the Union is strong.
After years of grueling recession, our businesses have created over 6 million new jobs. We buy more American cars than we have in 5 years, and less foreign oil than we have in 20. Our housing market is healing, our stock market is rebounding, and consumers, patients, and homeowners enjoy stronger protections than ever before. So, together, we have cleared away the rubble of crisis. And we can say with renewed confidence that the state of our union is stronger.
So I want to actually turn to Michael Schwartz. He's with the Republican Economical Central Committee here, and give you kind of a first shot. Here is an assessment of the State of the Union. Says the country is making progress. What's your own personal assessment? Are we moving in that direction? What's your feeling about the claims that he makes?
Well, to me, perception is reality. You look at consumer confidence; it's down. People still think they're hurting. I don't know how many millions of people listen to the State of the Union address. In all honesty, I didn't watch it. I actually read it. I don't have the hour to spend listening to everybody applaud. And the same thing goes for the Republican response, the Tea Party response. I just sit and read them because, really, their messages are clear. There's not a lot of bipartisanship out there, and there's not going to be, as long as one side continues to go in the direction he wants to go. President Obama's been in office since 2009. Where's all... He can talk about 6 million jobs, but how many have been lost? What's the net? He can talk about less dependence on foreign oil, but part of that's because of the economy. Part of that is because, despite his best efforts in some cases, we are actually extracting more of our own natural resources. So, I don't understand. I mean, to me, the State of the Union is a laundry list of what he wants to accomplish in the next year. The problem is, I didn't see a lot of things he wanted to accomplish except for the idea that he wants to accomplish them himself. He doesn't want to go through Congress. He says, well, if Congress is going to hold me up, I'll just do it myself. That's not the idea of working both sides of the aisle to me.
Let me follow up on this, because this idea, and it'll go into our next clip in a moment, but this idea that's well, the president is staking out a particular course, whether it's liberal, left, center, progressive, whatever. And I hear that a lot from the Republican side. And I guess the question is that what did you expect that a Democratic president was going to propose in the first place, as opposed to, say, if were President Romney, for example, he wouldn't be staking out positions that were satisfactory or liberal, as it were, or progressive, that would satisfy the Democrats. And then the charge would be, well, Romney is not being cooperative with a Democratic, right? A minority,
well,
majority.
We're not expecting him to be cooperative with the Republicans. In fact, he's the one that said, you guys lost, so I don't really have to deal with you. But the problem is he does have to deal with us in the fact that we have the House. If you look at the election as a whole, Obama got 51% of the vote. And yeah, a lot of people say that's a mandate. Well, on the other hand, the House of Representatives, which is elected by the people, it's a majority Republican. The Senate went sort of majority Democrat, but that's not held in every state. So some Democrats got in, some Democrats lost, et cetera, et cetera. I don't see a mandate that says we need to go in that direction. I see where some compromise is necessary. Unfortunately, President Obama has shown the tendency to govern by executive order and bypass Congress entirely.
Mike Prettl, you're with the Democratic Party here in Wacomico. How do you respond to?
Well, first, I just want to my friend Michael. He talks about the House majority being Republican. As he knows, I think as well as all of us do, that the majority of votes went Democratic. Actually, it's just because of the gerrymandering that's been done in Texas and places like that they still have the majority of seats, but they don't have the majority of votes, and the House races were actually cast for Democrats. But I think you're right, Don, that to some extent it's a question of whose ox is gored and which side of the aisle you're looking for from. But those of us who consider ourselves progressives were somewhat critical of the president during the first 4 years for trying too hard to work with the Republicans and making too many concessions to the Republicans. And he now has finally said, well, I can't work with these people. They're not willing to cooperate. I mean, there's never been an obstruction, or at least not in my lifetime, but 50 years I've been following politics, and as obstructionist to Congress as there is on the Republican side today. So the president says, if they're not going to work with me, then I'm going to have to go it alone and go with my Democratic majority in the Senate and do what I can to get some things passed that the American public needs. So, you know, I think it was an admirable speech, and I think he struck just the right tone, and I think he's doing what needs to be done to move the country forward.
Michael, I saw you shaking your head. What's the problem with his assertion?
First of all, it was a speech. It's a speech, and not President Obama is not always known for saying exactly what his intentions are. Second of all, I look at it this way. He may be correct. I know there's probably more Democratic votes out there, but it was not a complete mandate like he would make it out to be.
Or as Mr. Bush made it out to be when he won by 51% 12 years ago, 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too. But he also had a Congress that was very slightly Republican. that thought went right out.
Ah. Well, let me get back to that. I want to turn to Michael Laughlin, because you're a political science professor. Obviously, you politics on the activist side, but try to address this issue about what seems to be these very stark and very different views of the role of government, of what should be done and not be done. We obviously have a sort of a political game going on, which we understand, but there also seems to be a very fundamental difference that just is not, there's no bridging it.
Yeah, I think that the it's very clear, it seems to me, that the ratio of power is pretty much the status quo ante, and that is that while the Democrats won the presidency back and won the Senate back, they didn't win the House back, and that's what preceded, that was what was in place prior in Obama's first term. And the division, I mean, I think the conservative agenda still remains in play because the caucus on the right and the Republican Party is more conservative even than Ronald Reagan, in that they their position, I think Marco Rubio spoke to this. It was stark that in one sense even the modest proposals that Obama presents are looked upon as radical overreach by the federal government, and the appeal there is to, I mean, I think their appeal to balanced budgets goes back to Hoover-like positions. Rolling back the New Deal is really, I think, their vision, and that's their guiding vision. And Obama and the Democrats are really left attempting to salvage, right, the New Deal positions, and to simply try to maintain some progressive policies in place. I mean, all the proposals that Obama came up with, I mean, increasing the minimum wage, well, even if he were able to get that through, that's only essentially retrenching what wage workers have lost. Is he going to get that through? Doubtful, right? So he is pushed to do things through executive order. Okay, because of the Republican caucus being obstructionist. And that's their, I think, well, if I make one last point, part of the agenda is to delegitimize the government's ability to do anything, to undermine the credibility of the federal government. That, I think, is the larger philosophical position of this very, I really call it a reactionary caucus. It's not conservative. They want to roll back. They want it to take down the federal government's ability to do progressive things.
Let me turn to that. Let's spin off of that, because Marco Rubio, of course, made the Republican response. And as a matter of fact, he was interviewed on television and said, quote, "I don't believe a minimum wage law works," end quote, which minimum wage has been around for many years. And he really takes the task, and I think goes on this theme about a big government. And so let's go ahead and listen to Marco Rubio and his criticism of the president when it comes to big government.
Presidents in both parties, from John F. Kennedy to Ronald Reagan, have known that our free enterprise economy is the source of our middle class prosperity. But President Obama, he believes it's the cause of our problems, that the economic downturn happened because our government didn't tax enough, spend enough, or control enough. And therefore, as you heard tonight, his solution to virtually every problem we face is for Washington to tax more, borrow more, and spend more. This idea that our problems were caused by a government that was too small, it's just not true.
And we also want to remind people that amongst some of the proposals, obviously raising the minimum wage to $9 an hour, an early education for four-year-olds, also a $1 billion to create 15 manufacturing hubs. He's going to use the executive powers to create three of those. Also, a creation of an energy security trust from revenues of the federal oil and gas leases, as well as an attempt to double renewable energy into both the wind, solar, and geothermal sources by 2020. So those are actually some of the proposals. Certainly, he also had proposed as well. So I want to turn back to you, Michael Swartz. Is that the basic divide here? And how far do you think that your party's effort against rolling back government goes? You heard Michael Lofton here a moment ago suggest that perhaps it goes all the way back to repealing the New Deal. What's your sense about where are you on this, and where is your party on this?
Where I am is I'd rather go back to Coolidge rather than Hoover, because Hoover was actually a very radical, he was the precursor to the New Deal. He talked about radical overreach, and the thought I was trying to get at, and mm-hmm. now I know why I do writing as a business and not television, is that in 2009, 2010, Obama had all of Congress. The reason the election of 2010 turned out like it did was because the people thought it was a radical overreach. They said, no, we do not want Obamacare. No, he did not address the economy. He tried to get cap and trade in instead. The idea is, of what Rubio said, is that there's got to be a check and balance. This country is built on the middle class. It was built on businesses being able to produce goods and employ people and have the government stay out of the way. That's the way I look at it. I would probably rather the government get out of the way even more than Senator Rubio would. But the question is, obviously, yeah, you're going to have a difference of opinion. What we have seen is that what Obama wants to do hasn't worked.
Well, let me follow up because in terms of your party, how far do you think your party wants to go in terms of rolling back programs? I mean, this has been suggested, the suggestion that they want to roll back, say, or even eliminate Medicare or Social Security, for example, or Medicaid, or those basic programs that a lot of Americans have come to depend on. Do you think that they're willing to go that far?
They're more in the line of reforming it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I happen to think, and this is just my personal opinion, not the party, that I think in the long run they are unsustainable because too many promises have been made that can't be kept. But as a party, perhaps there is a chance we can save Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and make them work, perhaps handing them over to the states as they were supposed to be. I do believe President Bush wanted to hand things over to the states more. Social Security, President Bush wanted to privatize it. Not to a full extent, but partially, just a little bit. Let people decide what they want to do with their money. Unfortunately, we President Obama presents it as an either-or choice. Either we have Social Security or we don't have Social Security. And he blames Republicans for saying they want to cut Graham off. Push Graham off the cliff. I don't think the party as a whole does. The reputation we seem to get is that we're uncaring, and we're really not. I mean, I know I have my disagreements with Mike, and I have my disagreements with Michael here, but we all want what's best. That's the problem. We have suffered from a perception that we want to just cut people off, and that's really not the truth. It's an idea of making government a partner rather than an overseer.
Let me turn to Michael Pretl and get some response to it. And is this a case of irreconcilable differences?
Well, I'm afraid the present political posture, as Michael often said, is pretty much nothing is going to improve in the near future. But I mean, just to respond, I mean, to this idea that government's unsustainable. I mean, that seems to be their base. I got involved in politics 50 years ago. I was a Barry Goldwater fan. You know, matter of fact, Ronald Reagan really turned me on to politics. And I can remember Ronald Reagan when he ran in 1978 and 79. He said, "We have a national debt that's unsustainable. It's over $1 trillion. And he said, "I'm going to pay back the national debt if I'm elected." Well, he was in office for 8 years. He just had tripled the national debt, which nobody has done. It went from 1.1, I think, to $2.8 trillion in 8 years. And, I mean, that was unsustainable then, and now we're at $14 trillion or $15 trillion, and it's unsustainable. And we've been hearing the same Republican cant for some time, but what happened was that instead of Reagan, and he disabused me of the notions that he was on the right track. What he did basically was he made the rich richer and the poor poorer. You know, and I mean, for 80 or 90 years up until that time, the top and the bottom of the economy became closer. Beginning in 1980, if you look at any of the graphs, the rich got richer and basically the poor or the middle class have stayed in the same position. So they can say that they share our values and that they want to accomplish the same things. But all these programs, when they play out, basically help people get wealthier. And that's where we are today.
I want to turn to, there's a third voice in this, which is Senator Rand Paul. He's a Republican out of Kentucky, but also delivered the Tea Party response under the Tea Party Express. And he sort of pox on both houses when it comes to spending.
It is often said bipartisanship up here. That's not true. In fact, there's plenty of bipartisanship. Both parties have been guilty of spending too much, of protecting their sacred cows, of backroom deals in which everyone up here wins, but every taxpayer loses. It's time for a new bipartisan consensus. It's time Democrats admit that not every dollar spent on domestic programs is sacred, And it's time Republicans, myself included, realize that military spending is not immune to waste and fraud.
I want to turn to Michael Laughlin. What are we to make of this this third response? I think this is, by the way, the third year in a row this has occurred. Michelle Bachmann obviously did the first one. How do you see the Tea Party developing here in terms of the current leadership, certainly in the House, establishment Republicans, state folks? I mean, how do you see this political process playing out?
I think it confirms my sense of the evolving reality here, and that is that Rand Paul does represent part of that hardcore caucus of Tea Party folks who are not bothered by attempting to sustain even a Republican majority. I mean, it seems to me that they're willing to try to shake things up as much as possible, and if that means, well, clearly, bringing down establishment Republicans right and left, even when that's going to destroy the ability of the Republican Party to win the presidency or win majorities, they're willing to do that because I think, again, what you heard in his message was that the government is not to be trusted, either in domestic side or on the military side, and that we need to bring taxes further down. And we need to cut spending and again, further draining, right, the idea that the federal government should have some capability to operate. I think Rand Paul, of course, his dad is a Texas congressman, the libertarian who ran for the Republican nomination. And Rand Paul, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Because one of the things, he talks about, obviously, about a balanced budget, constitutional amendment, term limits, cutting foreign aid, although he's also very dovish, if that's the word to use, when it comes to military engagement, something that does go against the grain, I think, within the Republican Party, certainly a lot of the leadership. Michael Schwartz, what are we to make of where the Tea Party is now? How much of an influence? I mean, is there a divide here? I mean, it looks as if there's certainly a divide that's going on in terms of the Tea Party folks and the establishment Republicans.
There is, and that's sort of unfortunate because it actually helps the cause of the Democrats in that you split the party, your opposition is weaker. The problem is, and you talked about the government, it's the government as constituted now. My biggest problem with the way government is, and I actually am more of a Tea Party sympathizer, is that too much government is done by regulation and by fiat. For example, I happened to see the other day where there's a whole new slew of regulations being dropped on the from HUD. They want to set it up so that you have it's a probable cause for discrimination, whether there's actual mm-hmm. fact or not. That's gonna create a chilling effect. It's gonna push us back to where it extends the mortgage industry and goes back to the same problems we had half a decade ago. But it's government by regulation. When you have $1.7 trillion worth of regulation every year, that's a drag on the economy. The idea that government should be limited, not out, not gone, limited, that's the Tea Party.
Michael Brettel, where do you see all these sort of dynamics heading in terms of whether or not the president's going to be able to get anything done?
Well, I think he's got to get little done because it's a question of whether the Tea Party controls the Republican Party. You know, and the man I have no sympathy for is probably John Boehner, who has to deal with all of this because he's a guy who wants to get things done himself, but he's faced with a caucus that he just can't control. And, you know, they're throwing obstacles up to the Republicans, to the Democrats, and they're also throwing obstacles up to things that he wants to accomplish. And, you know, I don't see that changing in a big hurry. I think, unfortunately, we may have to wait until the election 2 years down the road to see whether, in fact, things have gotten so bad and so negative that the voters then revolt and say let's drive those guys out of office and put in some people.
Real quickly,
yeah, I'd have to agree. One early indication is the filibuster of Senator Republican Senator Hagel
to
be Secretary of Defense. It is unprecedented, and it bodes ill for immigration reform, any kind of gun legislation coming through. And again, the minimum wage dead in its crib.
I was gonna, in terms, by the way, of Chuck Hagel. My understanding is that Republicans have said that they'll filibuster until that they want to get some more information. But they have said, at least some of them have said, they would allow vote John McCain, Senator John McCain. So. I want to thank all of our guests. Michael Predel, he's with the Wicomico County Democratic Party, also involved in environmental issues. Michael Schwartz, he's with the Republican Wicomico Central Committee, as well as Salisbury University political science professor Michael Laughlin, also is a local progressive activist. And we've, of course, been talking about the President's State of the Union. We'll keep on top of that and see how those things go. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.